Welcome to the Lucra Podcast. I'm your host, Mindy Kinnis. My goal is to fan the flame of the dream in your heart. As my guests and I share our journeys on the path to success, you'll get an insider's look at how we got to where we are and the beliefs that create our reality. When you follow your heart path to ignite your mind and delight your spirit, you can create a lucrative life of freedom and purpose. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, my friends. I am so stoked for today's conversation. I am here with my friend, Allie Katz. Allie, just over 10 years ago, filed bankruptcy and now is running an eight-figure business. Whoo! Can't wait to dig into all of this stuff. Allie, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Here's what I'm so excited about is I also filed bankruptcy just over 10 years ago. It was actually just 1 year prior to yours. Mine was in 2011.
Oh, wow.
But let's just be clear, I haven't quite gotten to eight figures yet. So just the fact that you said that, I was like, huh, I'm so freaking inspired and excited about this conversation to talk about like going from that, which you and I both know is the lowest of shittiest places, to what you have created now. So first off, let's start with today, and then we'll work our way backwards. What are you doing that you are running this eight-figure business?
So what I'm doing is, interestingly, what I started off doing 20 years ago, well before the bankruptcy. And I have trained I call it an army of heart-centered lawyers in a counseling methodology that I created around estate planning and business planning. We call it life and legacy planning. I've been really developing it for the last 20 years. The bankruptcy period is when I almost walked away from all of it and gave up on it and decided I wasn't good at business. I didn't want to be in business. I didn't want to do business. I wanted to move to a farm and live on this farm and never do business again, because it was the experience with my first two businesses was so challenging and painful for me that I just thought, I must not be good at this. I'm going to give up. So I did.
But oh my gosh, the universe was like, no, my dear, you are not done. So let's go right back to almost where you started with this big idea. And gosh, there is so much like fertile ground in this, because a lot of my audience is either early stage entrepreneur, maybe aspiring entrepreneur, and a lot of them are in the struggle of that crappy time. And we both have been there. So let's work our way backwards a little bit from today, what you're doing now.
Yeah.
Like, how did you get back to that? What were you doing before?
Yes. So here's what's amazing. Through this whole process, I've actually discovered that there's this spiral path that we're all on, and we get to revisit everything again and again until we learn the right lessons. And we're either spiraling up or we're spiraling down. And spiraling up or spiraling down has nothing to do, by the way, with how much money you're making. It has to do with how much clarity you have, spiral up, or how much confusion and just like, I'm lost, I'm confused, spiral down. And so my first two businesses pre-bankruptcy, I built them to million-dollar businesses, because that was the goal, right? The goal was, I will be successful when I've built million-dollar businesses. That's how I will know that I've won the game. And I did. I won the game on every level from that first turn of the wheel, from that first definition of success. I graduated first in my class from Georgetown Law. I made it. I got a job at the best law firm in the country, the law firm started by Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett's personal lawyer. I was there for 3 years while becoming a mom, gave birth to both of my children. Well, I gave birth to my daughter before I started between law school and starting that career. And then my son 3 years into being an associate at that firm, and then left and started my own law practice, knowing nothing about business whatsoever. And in 3 years, did it. I built it to the million-dollar business. I then wrote the best-selling book. I joined all the masterminds. I appeared on TV as a family financial and legal expert. I put my kids in private school. I lived three houses from the beach. And I was absolutely, completely miserable.
And this was,
this was like a major shock to me. How could it be?
What went wrong here?
Something went really wrong because I made it, but I really clearly didn't make it. And the only thing that I could see to do at that time was to walk away from all of it and go through the ego death process. And I didn't really know that was happening, Mindy. I thought I was going crazy. That's what I thought was happening.
I mean, really, like literally, did you think that?
Well, kind of. Yeah. Like, yeah. Let me just go back.
Yeah, tell me more about this.
Right. Because during that time, and I wrote a lot about it at the time. I was very public at the time, and I actually had a whole different name, right? So my name at that time, which may even be a time when we originally met.
Yeah,
I can't remember which name I had when we met, but my original name coming out of law school was Alexis Martin Neely. She was the one that wrote the best-selling book. She was the one that was on TV. And then I had an experience in September of 2009 with the plant medicine ayahuasca. And this was, you know, very early days. People didn't really do ayahuasca a lot back then.
Right, or at least they weren't talking about it.
Yeah. Now it's like all the thing.
Yeah.
But back then, and Alexis Martin Neely, that woman, she was very judgmental about ayahuasca. She was like, oh, that's just something people do to get high. But then all of a sudden there was a moment where it was like, oh gosh, I'm being called to ayahuasca. I didn't even know what being called meant, but it was happening. So I have this ayahuasca journey. And in this ceremony, I have the experience of being visited by my father, who had died 5 years before, and seeing and really envisioning and feeling, viscerally feeling, a world that works for everyone. A world that works for everyone, a world where we're living in harmony, a world where we are in support of each other, where we're collaborating, where we're like growing food and living on land, and like people are happy. And then I come back into the reality of my own life. And I'm deeply confronted with all of the ways that I am not living that reality. And in fact, I'm contributing to the exact opposite in so many ways that were, I thought, necessary for me to be playing and winning the game. So I didn't know how to reconcile this. And today there's more integration support after you do plant medicine. Back then there was no integration support. So my integration process was ultimately within about 3 months, 4 months to leave Los Angeles, move out of Los Angeles, move to Boulder, Colorado, not really knowing what I was leaving for, and to do a lot more ayahuasca. And in that process, I took on a new name. This other name came through, this other being came through, and her name was Ali Shanti. And Alexis Martin Neely and Ali Shanti did not like each other.
I can see that.
They were very, very different. Because
like, actually, like, I knew both of those women, and they were very different.
Very different, as opposed as you can get. And so, you know, today we know all about parts work and inner conflict and internal family systems, but this was not a reality back then.
Wow.
Nobody talked about their inner conflict. We didn't know about parts work or internal family systems in the way that we know about it now. And yet here I was living this out in the public and letting people see the disintegration, the fracture that existed in my psyche between these two parts, not as multiple personality disorder, because I think that's one where your parts don't know about each other. My parts knew about each other and they didn't like each other, and they were certain that the other one was doing it all wrong and screwing everything up.
Totally. Let me just give a visual for anyone listening to us or watching this right now. So I remember, I can picture it perfectly. There's a picture of you as Alexis Martin Neely that is like the typical corporate headshot, very professional, you know, just perfect. And then Ali Shanti was like feather wearing, hippie, like more boho, just totally the complete opposite of the one. I visualize that so perfectly in my mind right now.
Yes. So I was living that reality. And I made the decision, I have to live this publicly. This is the only way that this can happen. I can't hide it. And I need to live it publicly. And I also need to be able to support my family. And there's no way that this is going to be okay. Like, I can't stay a lawyer. I can't continue to serve lawyers and be all of who I am. There's no way they are going to reject me. So I did a thing that I've been doing since I was a kid, and I preemptively rejected them. I said, I am not going to serve lawyers anymore. I'm not going to be a lawyer anymore. I let my lawyer license lapse. I'm not going to be a lawyer anymore. And hey, lawyer community, I'm not going to serve you anymore. And I'm going to go do this other thing. I'm moving to a farm. I am going to be Ali Shanti, and I'm going to launch a live stream called The Whole Truth Show. And I'm going to show up on every Tuesday for 4 hours. This is kind of before podcasts were really a big thing. I'm going to show up on every Tuesday for 4 hours, and I'm just going to do stream of consciousness and see who shows up. And the most interesting thing happened when I did that. A group of those lawyers, one in particular actually, came to me and he said, well, can I just keep paying you anyway? Just to be able to use what you've already created. Because what you've created works really well for me in my practice. So what if I just... I'll just pay you a few $100 a month, because they had been paying me $1,500 a month up until that point. But because I was going through all this and I didn't want to create anything new as a lawyer, and I wasn't even sure if I wanted to serve lawyers, and I was very lost and confused, downward spiral, I was going to walk away from all of it. Luckily, two things happened. That man came to me and said, well, can I just pay you for what you've already created? Intellectual property, which shockingly, even as a lawyer who graduated first in my class and all of the things, I did not understand intellectual property at that
what?
Time. True story.
Okay.
In fact, it's a lesson that I am still learning at a deeper and deeper level. I'm in fact embroiled in a big litigation matter right now around intellectual property. That's a whole big conversation we may not have time for today, but it's an important one because most people are underestimating the value of their intellectual property. Deeply underestimating.
I'm sure that is true. Yeah.
And I was really conflicted as well about it because I wanted to come at my intellectual property from this place of like, oh, I'm just the conduit and I don't actually own any of it. And I should just like make it all freely available, Creative Commons. And a lot of things that ultimately have become much more clear to me as I've moved out of kind of green consciousness, if you know, spiral dynamics and an integral, more integral consciousness. And so anyway, he came to me, he said that, and I was like, oh, okay, yes. You can pay $397 a month and you can use the book that I wrote. You can use the kids protection plan that I created. You can use all these presentations. You could use all these tools. I'm not going to create anything more right now, but you can use them all. The second thing that happened at that time was my best friend at the time, who had just graduated law school, was about to launch her law practice. And she was going to go do something like public interest, but she was going through a divorce. And she needed to be able to support her kids with her law degree. Her alimony was only going to last a little while. And I said to her, I was like, Martha, you are not going to be able to afford to support your kids on like being a guardian ad litem or being in public interest. You actually need to build a business with your law degree. And she said, well, but I really want to work with families and I want to make a difference in their lives. And I said, hey, why don't you do what I teach lawyers to do and be a personal family lawyer? And she said, oh, I don't want to do estate planning. It's so dry and boring and da, da, da. And it's only for rich people. And it's just to help people get richer and save money on their taxes. And I'm not about that. It's like, no, it's not about that, actually. It's really not about that. If it was about that, I wouldn't have chosen it. It's actually about something much more deeper and much more important. Let me just show you I'll just show you for free because I'm not doing this anymore. So I'm going to go off and do this other thing, but let me just show you this thing and I'll just hold your hand and walk you through the process. So in the year before I filed bankruptcy, I could only make $5,000 a month in order to be able to file bankruptcy.
Right.
So the beautiful thing about that year was I made the commitment to myself that in that year, I would only do what I would do for free. If I wouldn't do it for free, I would not do it. But if I would do it for free, then I would do it. And by the way, I can only get paid $5,000 a month anyway. So like I had to keep my income low. And this was the untangling of all, not all. This was the beginning, rephrases, not hype. This was the beginning of the untangling of a lot of the conditioning I had around money, because up until that point, from graduation of law school until really 2010, 2011, in this time frame when I was experiencing all of this, every decision I made was through the lens of money. How much will it bring me? Will it get me to seven figures? Who should I spend time with? What event should I go to? What decisions do I make? I make it through the lens of money because that's what I was taught. That's what I was taught.
You know what's so fascinating to me about this?
Yeah.
You and I, we had such an opposite thing because yours was all through the lens of money. Mine was all entirely pushing money away.
Well, that's so there's four expressions of what I've now, through this whole process, I've discovered something called money dysmorphia.
Ooh, let's talk about it.
Yes. And there's four expressions. My expression was more, 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 more. Your expression probably was just getting by. Yeah. Push it away. I don't need it. I don't want it. I said that all the time.
I always was like, it's not about the money. It's not about the money. I'm here to like do good in the world. And it's not about the money. And then the money was like, peace out, bitch. I'm leaving.
Exactly. That's right. And neither one of those. And then the other two expressions. So those are really the two big ones, more, 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 and just getting by. So you can see those two inside of both of us. The other two are more extreme. We ultimately both got to rock bottom.
Yeah.
And then the one that's extreme on the opposite end is misalignment. And that is where somebody gets to extreme amounts of money, but they just keep finding themselves in misaligned realities.
Yeah, I've had a lot of clients like that.
Yeah. So these are the four expressions of money dysmorphia. And that year where I would only do what I would otherwise do for free was the year that I began to discover this thing called money dysmorphia. And I really began to discover what I now understand as well is that most of us have no idea what is our relationship to enough. Mm. What is enough? How do we even know what enough is? What is enough?
Preach.
Yeah. So there's a whole set of teachings that ended up coming through around that. But before any of those teachings could come through, I'm spending this year only doing what I would do for free. This guy is paying me, and other lawyers ended up paying me too, this $350 a month. And by the way, they weren't paying me. They were paying my company. The really cool thing that I did, because I knew that I was going to end up going through the bankruptcy process well before it happened, actually, I could see it coming, is I actually had done really good asset protection. Mm-hmm. So my companies, this is like I didn't know a lot about intellectual property. I didn't know a lot about how to be a leader or employee matters or even contracts, but I knew a lot about asset protection. I put in place very good asset protection structures. I planned for the bankruptcy very well. And as a result, my companies were able to survive the bankruptcy. I went through personal bankruptcy. My companies, which I did not own,
right,
they were owned an irrevocable trust that I had created many, many, many years before that actually were created for me by grandmother and stepmom, were what owned the companies. So they did not go through the bankruptcy process. So I was able to, you know, keep a team and keep these lawyers were paying the company and this. And then I was able to really just see, okay, what comes. And two really important things came besides him wanting to pay me for my intellectual property. My best friend needing to start a business with her law degree that she was going to love and that was going to be inspiring to her and that was going to make a real difference in her community. And I did say personal family lawyer is it. I taught it to her for free. In that process, I got to see, I got the reflection back of, oh, this is actually really valuable. I'm not selling bullshit, because I was actually really afraid that I was selling bullshit.
Like, honestly.
Because that's my karma. Remember I told you before Alex.
Yes. But now you need to share it with everybody else.
My father, and probably in other parts of my lineage as well, went to jail when I was in fifth grade for selling bullshit. And so I needed to heal that karma. And when I came up in the world of online marketing, I got really afraid that maybe I was just following in my dad's footsteps.
I love how the universe like put you into that exact path so that it could be so front and center of like, this is what you're doing.
Yeah. And I'm in an industry that is it's adjacent to it's in some ways my dad's same industry. Like there's people in our industry who have gone to prison, like for the same thing my dad went to prison for. And I was really afraid that I just become my dad. I'm just really good at sales and marketing. And now I'm selling bullshit. And I was a no. I was an absolute no. I am not repeating that. Absolutely no. And so that was also part of me walking away from everything is like, if that's what I'm doing, So I'm walking away from that. And because Ali Shanti didn't trust Alexis Martin Neely, then, you know, Ali Shanti was like, yeah, that's just bullshit. So.
And wait, hold on. So isn't Katz your father's name?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. So we're going to
that story.
Yeah, we will wrap that all up because today I'm neither. Well, I am both. I'm all of them. But my name that I carry in the world is Ali Katz, which is my father's original birth name, his original birth name. When he went to prison, he was not William Katz. He was Billy Martin, which was the name I was born with, Alexis Martin. Mm-hmm. Neely was my married name. I got married in law school. And so Alexis Martin Neely was carrying more of the lineage of my father's reality. And then Ali Shanti was, you know, I would say in some ways the first real connection to my heart. Because Alexis Martin Neely was all mind.
Yeah.
And Ali Shanti was all heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ali Katz has been the union, the integration. And interestingly enough, the name Ali Katz came through at the worst moment in my life, which was actually a few years post-bankruptcy. Bankruptcy was not actually my rock bottom. I thought it was. Rock bottom was a few years later when I realized I hadn't fully learned all the lessons. And oh my God, what am I going to do?
Well, and I mean, you're still here.
Ali Katz, the name came through in 2015, but I did not step into the being of Ali Katz until 2018, 2019, 2020 is when I was finally ready to be like, okay, I can actually integrate these parts, Alexis Martin Neely and Ali Shanti, into Ali Katz and become this being that I saw in my reality in 2015 at the moment when I really realized, oh God, these parts, they want to die. Ali Shanti, Alexis Martin Neely, oh God, I want to kill them. They want to die. But like, if they want to die, I wanted to die.
Yeah.
Then something wants to live. Something wants to live. And what is it that wants to live? Oh, it's this integrated one, Ali Katz. It's a longer process than what just happened. But and it's really helped me to understand as well what estate planning, what life and legacy planning is really all about, that this thing, this personal family lawyer thing, it is not just about documents, and it is not just about like avoiding probate. There is a much, much, much deeper thread around what are we truly inheriting? What does it mean to die before we die? How do we use the death portal, which I believe you have a lot of understanding about yourself, and maybe we have another whole conversation about that another day.
A little bit.
Yeah. How do we use this death portal actually to change the way we make decisions through our life so that we can create lives that are truly worth living and not just be on this treadmill of dread that, you know, has us at the end of our life looking back on the question of what did I actually do? What really mattered? You know? So I got the chance to ask that through this process in 2011, what actually does matter? It can't be money. Leslie, I did not come to this planet to earn money. Although we certainly need money to fuel our creative dreams. So the third thing that happened in that year, the first one being the guy paying me for the intellectual property, the second one, me showing my best friend how to build a business with this thing that I wasn't sure if it was actually really good, and then watching her do it and being like, oh, wow, this is actually really good. The third thing was I helped two close friends that were in business together move through a really significant business partnership conflict that, had they not moved through it in the way that I helped them, would have destroyed the life's work that they created together. But the life's work was really important. And I really wanted to, because I would only, if I only do it, if I would do it for free. And I really wanted to help them get to the other side of this conflict in a way where the work could live, even though their partnership was not going to.
Yeah.
And I just loved doing that with them. And so when the bankruptcy was over, and I'm curious if you felt this way, like the minute I filed bankruptcy, fresh start. You didn't feel that.
No, and I'll tell you why. Because I did not have all of the information and intellect on everything that you did to protect your assets. I didn't. So when I went to talk to that bankruptcy judge and they say to you, okay, well, you know, like what are your current assets? And I was like, I literally have like $300 in my bank. And he just looked at me. And he was, I mean, I imagine he didn't say this, but I imagine he was like, good God, girl, like what the hell? Like, what are you going to do? And he just said, he just like looked at me with a lot of compassion and he was just like, well, good luck to you. And I didn't know what the fuck I was going to do. So no, I did not feel like it was freeing. I felt like, holy shit, I'm in the hole at the bottom right this second. And there, I mean, thankfully the only way is up, but I didn't know how to do that.
Yeah. You didn't have the clarity at that moment.
Oh, I had nothing. I didn't have the clarity even on my business.
Yeah.
On marketing and sales, on anything. I mean, nothing at that point. So it just felt very, very heavy still. And oh, by the way, I still had like six figures of student loans that, of course,
that
are not
get wiped out.
Yeah, wiped in bankruptcy. So I was still in it from that. So yeah, I had a little different experience.
I want a whole nother episode on what you did at that moment, because that in and of itself is a huge learning experience for people that are there right now.
Yeah,
you know, there are a lot of people like, how do you, what is the next step after that? And for me, because I had a lot of knowledge.
Yeah, like I wish that I would have known somebody like you at that time that could have said, hey, Mindy, like, this is what you need to think about or what I like. Oh, that would have been so amazing.
Yes.
But clearly I needed to go through all the shit of it. So.
Yes, exactly. So for me in that moment, August, 2012, it was a moment of, okay, I am free of this debt now. And yes, I also did still have and do still have to this day my student loan debt. I'll never pay it off. The interest rate is way too low. I mean, I'll pay the payments I make every month and then one day it'll be paid off. But I'm never going to accelerate that. I have to say my current experience with debt and all and credit and all of that is I really love debt and I really love credit. It is one of the best resources on the planet.
Allie, do you want to know something?
Yeah.
I learned this from you. I totally forgot about this, but I learned this from you a million years ago when you were talking about, you were like, you had gotten credit, I think, from PayPal at first, like after the bankruptcy, and then nobody gives us credit because they're like, you just filed bankruptcy and whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing your information about that. And I was like, well, maybe I could do that. And that's exactly what I did then.
Yes.
So that all started from you. Now I've taken it the other way because I did pay off my student loans because I'm like,
because you're scared.
So done with all of that. And I'm happy to have debt for current things, but that just felt like it was time.
Great. I think the most important thing is that we all really get in the right relationship with it. You know, we get in the right 100%. Relationship with it. We understand how to use it wisely, which I really didn't know how to do the first time around.
That was me too. I was a disaster. So yeah.
And this is part of the whole turn of the wheel thing, right? This is part of the whole turn of the wheel. Like I'm getting, you know, you asked like, well, how are you running an 8-figure business now? Because I learned how to get into right relationship with debt. There's no possible way that I would be able to have an 8-figure business now without being able to get in a right relationship with debt and leverage the resources, because there is a reality where in order to build something very substantial with a substantial team and the systems and the technology and everything that it takes, you will get to a point where you have to make investments that are exceeding the revenue that you are bringing in.
Right.
Period.
Beyond
end of story.
What you've got. Yep.
You have to in order to build a business. You can build a practice where you don't use debt, where you are always selling and earning to your capacity, and you're not exceeding that, and you're not hiring beyond your capacity, and you're like living within your business means, I guess, in a way, but you're all from that place. You will be capped because there's a time money equation.
Right.
And you're the human and you're only one human. And unless you are overselling and under delivering, which is the worst possible thing you could do. And a lot of people do that. A lot of people do that to fund their growth, oversell and under deliver. I'm not an overseller. I'm an underseller.
Over-deliverer. Yeah.
And in the past, I've often been an underpricer.
Me too.
And over-deliver. Like I can't do like $100,000 offer. Like somebody pay me $100,000. Just, that's not my thing. One day I might, but
I was going to say you could though, like you,
but I could.
Could.
Like I could because of the knowledge I have now and the value that I could provide. But my mindset around it has been, if I'm going to charge someone $100,000, then I need to be delivering $1 million of value to them. Yeah. And I don't know if I have enough energy to deliver $1 million of value.
I mean, that's a great,
someone
great point.
With everything else that I'm working on, because right. I really mostly, you know, really want to impact a lot of people rather than just one person that's paying me $100,000, mm-hmm. or even 10 people paying me $100,000, and they would take all my attention. If they're paying me $100,000, I would feel as if I need to give them all my attention, you
right.
know? So that's been the equation for me. So for me, when I came out of that bankruptcy moment, I got to say to myself, okay, now what do I want to do? I've spent this past year only doing what I want to do for free. I'm still Alexis Martinelli and Ali Shanti, and I'm living both of these people out in the world. And oh my goodness, I really actually think I like being a lawyer. I did a lot of lawyer things when I was only doing what I would do for free.
Right.
But now I also have this whole body of work coming through around money and what is enough and this money dysmorphia. And I have a lot to learn there myself still, because I'm like still just like a little brand new, you know, baby coming out of this, you know, fresh start, they call it. So, okay, I am going to serve lawyers again. And I'm going to figure out a way to do that while being Ali Shanti and Alexis Martinelli both. And so that was, you know, 2012, 2013. And I needed to go. There was another Dark Night of the Soul that came after that, as I mentioned, in 2015. Because what I realized when I started to rebuild is that the way that I tried to rebuild, and this is going to be really funny because one of my companies is called Eyes Wide Open. I actually tried to do it still with my eyes closed. And I was like, okay, I'm bad with money, but I do know how much I need. That was one of the things I came out of the bankruptcy year with, was really what I know is how little I need. Mm-hmm. I only need $10,000 a month. This was one of my biggest things. Like, I don't need $1 million business. Well, maybe my business needs $1 million, but I personally only need $10,000 a month. $10,000 a month. So I entered into a business relationship with two women who really loved my work around Eyes Wide Open and legal insurance, financial and tax systems. And I taught all of that through this lens of the more than $1 million of mistakes that I made. And so I partner with them and I said to them, okay, ladies, you just pay me $10,000 a month and you can keep everything else. And I will never look at the money.
What?
Yeah. And somehow I thought this was a good idea.
Oh.
Because in my mind, I wasn't trustworthy with the money.
Hurts for your past self.
Yes. Yeah, I wasn't trustworthy. And so they should just handle the money. Because somehow I'm like, they must be trustworthy with the money. They're like operational people.
Yeah. Right?
And so they're doing that. They're doing, and they're just giving me the $10,000 a month. And then on the lawyer side and on the new law business model side, I started this new company called New Law Business Model. And I'm doing it with my best friend who I had taught how to be a personal family lawyer. And I taught her for free and I'd never asked her for anything. And I decide we're going to do it with no legal agreements whatsoever.
Because I can already see where this is going. It's like making me feel uncomfortable.
It should make you feel very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because it was very stupid on my part, but important. You know, like I really needed to get all the way to the bottom. I needed to get all the way to the bottom of these really painful patterns where I just didn't trust myself. I didn't believe in myself. I didn't trust myself. I didn't understand that having legal agreements would protect our relationship.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that my intellectual property had value, true value, like real value. And that it deserved my protection, not so that nobody could use it, not so I could hoard it, but so that I could make sure that it was being used in alignment with my values, that my values were actually good and important and meaningful. And that with the partners on the other side, that I needed to be looking at the money. I needed to be looking at the money in a way that would put me in a real seat of responsibility. But I didn't really know how to do that quite yet. I like had an inkling. I knew that I needed to be tracking my debt, my credit. I knew that I needed to be looking at like how much I had, but I didn't have those systems in place yet. And I was way ahead of myself because I was teaching, as much as I did know, I was teaching some level of legal insurance, financial, and tax based on the mistakes I had made already. But I wasn't all the way at the bottom yet. So at the end of 2014 is when the bottom really hit. life conspired for my benefit in all of the worst possible ways it could to create a reality where the best friend that I had taught the model to had walked away from me and basically said, I don't want to do business with you. The two partners on the Eyes Wide Open side walked away from me and said, we don't want to do business with you. And it's all happening at the very same moment that my daughter is entering high school and becoming like the ringleader of all the kids doing all the bad things. And all that confluence of events led me deep into prayer, soul searching, and ultimately led me to go to Costa Rica and find myself while at the same time managing to turn everything around and plant the seeds of a new possibility. And that new possibility now, that was really mid 2015. And what are we, 2023? So, you know, now eight years later, I'm living that possibility. Today people love doing business with me. Today people say that I create a kind of safety for them that they don't experience with many other people. Today I attract the most amazing team members. Today I have 560 lawyers that are licensing my heart-centered counseling-based methodology for serving families through this lens of eyes wide open decision-making with the legal, insurance, financial, and tax systems that actually allow them to make really good decisions about the use of their resources by looking at death and incapacity as the portal. And I turned it around. I healed. Yeah. I did the healing work that was necessary to actually look at the places where I sucked, like I really sucked, and take responsibility and take ownership and heal it in not only in this being, but actually in my lineage. I have healed with my mother in a way that is shocking to me every day. And my sister, my sister and I have now come together to support my mom. My mom is living her best life, a life that I never even could have imagined for her living because of the way that my sister and I have come together to be able to show up for her. I used to dread the possibility that I would have to take care of my mom, which is like such a sign of illness actually in our society. And I was able to heal it in a way where like, I am so grateful for the opportunity that I will have to take care of my mother if and when that comes. And meanwhile, she's like living her best life. She finally retired. She owns her own home for the first time in her life. She is actually going on a 10-day cruise next week with her boyfriend. She spends her days playing cards and watching TV and exercising, which I in the past would have totally judged. Mm. And now I'm just like celebrating that this is what she gets to do. And I really believe, by the way, that that family healing is a huge portal, like massive, massive, massive portal. And I'm writing a book on this journey to financial liberation. Like I broke free of this idea that financial freedom was the answer and that somehow I needed to have a certain amount of money in the bank and then I would be free. And I broke free of that trap. And today I'm on this journey to financial liberation. I'm living it. And every day I just am like incredibly grateful that all of it happened so that I get to share the story of it, because I think a lot of people are trapped in it in the way that I was. I was really, really, really trapped and my life was really bad.
Yeah. But you know what? You said it. You asked me, you know, how do you go up from that place where you're so at nothing? But it is exactly what you said. And that is planting a seed of a new possibility in the future, a new reality, creating that and literally starting in the muck of it with the freaking seed. And that's all you have. Yeah. And then eventually that seed roots and grows and becomes, and that's it.
And it's the, you know, it's the hero's journey.
Totally.
And it's the lotus blossom.
Yes.
And it's all of these metaphors that we hear about. And I think that what I would say about it in that moment when it all actually really began to shift, it's one of the phases of this journey to financial liberation that I teach is detach. And detach happens before the liberation stage. So there's generate. Learn to generate what you need, when you need it, on demand, in alignment with your values. There's steward. Learn to take care of what you have.
Yes.
Invest it wisely, and not just your money, but your time, energy, attention, and money, with legal, insurance, financial, and tax systems to support it. But then there's this detach phase. And this detach phase is a really important phase because you can choose into detachment and choose to make choices that will lead you into liberation, because life actually always is wanting you to liberate. Life itself wants us to liberate. And if we don't detach, if we don't choose detachment, then we get forced into liberation. And the force can feel like an, you know, I'll circle back to when I said, like, I thought I was going insane because I didn't know how to choose. So I was being forced, and it looked like life was taking everything away from me, but there was the higher self part of me that kept telling me and kept bringing people in my life to remind me that the more I could actually surrender to what was happening and recognize that all of this was of my own making, and take full responsibility and recognize that I was choosing, even though it looked like I was being forced.
Right.
That's when I could start to unwind the patterns. That was when I could start to unwind what I inherited. I could unwind the karma. I could unwind the money dysmorphia. And the key was integrity.
Oof.
And this is why I had to do it all publicly.
And you have done that. Holy shit, have you done that?
Yeah. Every stage. It's been the only way, because if I had tried to do it hiding, you know, in AA, they say we're only as sick as our secrets.
Right.
And I grew up with AA because my dad was an alcoholic and an addict and started bringing me when I was a kid because he was really afraid, you know, that I was going to become like him. And so I learned that right from the beginning. We're only as sick as our secrets. And even though my dad was in many ways, like a liar and a thief, he taught me never to lie.
Mm.
And there was a phase of my life where I did try to lie, and I did try to steal, like, you know, when I was like a waitress or something like that. And I saw it doesn't work. This is not the way. And I saw the only way is truth. This is the only way. And sometimes that truth looks like you saying, whoa, I really messed up here.
Right.
I really messed up, and I don't know exactly what I'm doing, and I need help. And that is one of the most powerful things I think that we can do, is acknowledge, I need help. I can't do this alone.
Oh my gosh. If my pride would have allowed me to state that back then,
yeah,
would have been a whole different outcome. But I was like, I got this. I got to be the, you know, tough one. I can handle this. I can figure this out. I'm smart. You know, I should know what I'm doing. I had no idea what I was doing, but I would not ask for help.
Yeah. I asked for a lot of help along the way and was amazed when people showed up. I mean, I even called James Altucher when I was considering going through bankruptcy. And I'm like, James, is this okay? And he was like, yeah, it's okay. You need to do this. It's going to be really good for you. And there are some places I do wish I would have asked for help more or different. I asked for help places that it seemed safe to ask for help, and I didn't ask for help from people that I felt like were going to charge me a lot of money to get the help.
Yeah.
I was too scared of getting taken advantage of or ripped off. And I do think that there are probably some people who could have helped me maybe not have to go as far down the spiral as I went, but then again, maybe not. Like, I also do think that, like, the bottom I got to and the place I got to where I just ultimately really only had spirit to rely on, and really probably spirit was the only one that could have given me the guidance I needed at those places, was necessary. So,
well, and what a gorgeous time, right? Like, if you if we cannot or will not do that ourselves, just fully rely on spirit, sometimes the world is like, we're going to bring you right there. So that is literally all you have.
And so if you are there, I'd love to share my prayer with you.
Please.
Because you probably could use it. So if you're listening to this and you're in this moment and you're listening to this because this was the exact thing that you needed to hear at this exact moment.
By the way, if you're listening to it, it is the exact right thing you need to hear at this moment.
That's right. The prayer for me that has always delivered is show me the way. Show me the way, show me the way, show me the way. Please, 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 please. I cannot see. I need to see. Show me what I need to see because I can't see it right now. And I need your help and I need your guidance and I need to see what I need to see. Show me the way. And it pretty much is delivered every time.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So, I wasn't going crazy. I was just waking up and learning how to be a householder and learning, you know, to live in this human body while having this very, you know, spiritual and confusing experience.
That it is.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And
so let me ask you this. What would you say to your previous self when you were in it? Because like I said, a lot of people listening or watching right now are in it. So I feel like they would get maybe great solace from your words to them.
So I have had the opportunity to do this for myself because since it is a spiral path, now I've gotten to hit up against exactly where I was 10 years ago again.
Wow.
Last year. This time last year, I almost lost my company. Yes, I did. We were probably a month away from being out of business. And I handled it totally different.
Yeah.
It was a complete 180 degree difference from how I had handled it 10 years before. And I was so grateful to life for giving me the opportunity to revisit it again and do it different.
Yes.
And so what I did different first of all, I kept my attention focused on where I wanted to go, which is very difficult because where I wanted to go seemed impossible. At that moment, a year ago, this is going to sound crazy, I had hired a COO and gave him full control of the company because I had to revisit that mistake.
Yes.
And he had hired...
Wait, you're like making me cringe again.
I know. Cringeworthy. I know. And he had hired CFO. So I'm off working with private clients with my CFO and letting my COO.
That was so cringeworthy that it cut out for a second.
Okay.
So state that part again that you just talked about.
We have to revisit it all again and again and again, you know, until we learn the lessons. And so I had brought in this COO, and because he was a man, I was like, oh, he knows better than me. This time it wasn't women, you know, this is a guy, he knows better than me. So the first thing he did is he fired my CFO. He hired his own CFO. So I'm working with the CFO that he hired on behalf of private clients and helping them look at their financials. And all of a sudden it becomes clear to me, I'm not getting the financial reports like that my private clients are getting. And I start to see a number of patterns that ultimately lead me to see, oh, he's trying to take the company from me. Okay. Now, here's the crazy part. I wanted him to run the company. I have a whole ecosystem that I'm creating. I need other people to run this part of it. Had he been honest and straightforward and direct with me, like, have all the power. I love to give power to people. But the big mistake that I made is I took my eyes off the financial ball again, trusting him. So we get to about April of 2022 and I'm like, no, I'm not getting the reports I need. You keep telling me we're not hitting our numbers and I'm not able to see what I need to be able to see. We're bringing back in my CFO and it's a big fight to get my CFO back in there. Finally, they get on the financial reporting system that I invented that he wouldn't do. But finally, I'm like, no, we're doing it. And I come to see, oh my God, we're going to run out of money by September. Now, by that point, it's like May, June. Saving grace is that the SBA has not paid us out the $1.5 million that was coming through our EIDL loan. Right. So we have $1.5 million that's on its way and it keeps being on its way. It's going to be on its way. It's coming, but it keeps not coming. It comes just in time and the COO sent it back to the government. Sent it back to the government. And I can see because of our financials, we're not going to make payroll in a month without this money. Thank God that I had the financials. Thank God that I could see a future reality in which the money came back into the bank, in which I was able to take back control of the company, in which I was able to step into my right role in leadership, in which there was no possible way I was going to fire everybody and let the company go, in which I was able to see this work is critically important. I just need to step back into my power. I didn't know how to do 10 years ago. I didn't know any of that. Remember, I was doubting the value of the work 10 years ago. Completely doubting the value of the work. Now I'm no longer doubting the value of the work. I'm still a little bit doubting myself as a leader, but I'm seeing what this is. Oh, this is a test from the universe. If this is life saying to me, are you really going to be a leader or not?
You ready?
You say that
up?
You want to build a $1 billion enterprise that's going to transform the legal and financial services industry. Are you being that right now? Okay. Who do I need to be in this moment to show up for this catastrophe in a way that is inspiring, in a way that gets the money back in the bank, in a way that keeps all of the best team members that I have, because we had a lot of great team members, and lovingly releases the ones that are not
right?
How do I show up for this conflict with the COO in a way where it gets resolved as quickly and easily as possible, even though it's going to be very expensive, very expensive? Who does that woman, who is that woman? Let's go 10, 15 years into the future. That's running the $1 billion enterprise.
Right.
What are the decisions she makes today? And that's where I made my decisions from. I couldn't do that 10 years ago. Because I didn't have the understanding of who I really was, why I was really here, and what was really mine to do. So I had to have life force me into seeing that so that I could become that. And then this was the test of, okay, who do I need to be in this moment? Be that now through the entire catastrophe of all of it. So that was just a year ago. And now a year later, I have the most incredible team. We resolved everything. We got the money back from the government. That's unheard of. I mean, that's unheard of. We got the money back from the government. I've resolved things with the COO in a way where he's obviously no longer in the company. Cost me a lot of money. It's fine. It's only money.
Right.
I'll make more. That's the important thing to know here, people. You will always make more money. You will always make more money. Please never compromise the truth of who you are for money. Money is critically important. It's the fuel, but it's not the driver. You, your heart, the way you use your time, energy, and attention, who and how you choose to be, those are the drivers. And when you are living in full alignment with the truth of who you are and why you're here and what's yours to do, as much as you might know, and maybe you only know a little teeny bit of that right now. There's probably a lot of answers to that, by the way, by looking in your lineage to see what you inherited and what's actually yours here to heal, because that's always the first level. It's very difficult to actually get all the way without doing that first level of healing. If you just do that, I promise you life will show up with all the resources you need. Period, end of story. It is shocking how it happens.
Shocking and freaking awesome.
Amazing and so amazing.
Just like this conversation. Allie, I have a final question for you. If our viewers and listeners are like, holy shit, she's amazing. I want to follow her. I want to learn more. I want to see what she's all about. I want to get involved in what she's involved in. Where would you like to send them?
Two places. So I am at theallikatz.com. So A-L-I-K-A-T-Z is how you spell my name, theallikatz.com. I actually do currently have a course on my website, eyeswideopenlife.com. That might be going away. We're actually in conversation right now about like shelving that for a little while because my focus right now is really on personal family lawyer. And what I really would love for you to do is look for a personal family lawyer in your community. Tell that personal family lawyer, I heard Allie Katz on Mindy's show, and she helped me realize I really need to like look at what happens if I become incapacitated and when I die.
Yes, people, this is so important.
So important. And this is like the starting place to you stepping into a rite of passage of becoming an adult, no matter how old you are. You could be 80, exactly. You could be 20.
Exactly.
This is a rite of passage to look at, what do I have? What will happen to it if I become incapacitated or when I die? And when you actually step into that rite of passage of adulthood, that's really when you can start to get into integrity in every area of your life. And then if you have senior parents, you can go to them and say, hey, mom and dad, look, I did this thing. You should too. Let's talk about it. Let's do it together. Or if you are the senior parent with adult children, you can go to your adult children and say, hey, look, what we're doing this now, and we want to involve you in this process because it's really critically important to do it as a family, really critically important. So personalfamilylawyer.com is where you can find a lawyer who's been trained in helping you to do that, helping you to look at, what do I have? Where is it? What will happen to it? How do I involve my family in this process? How do I do the right thing? It's not just about like going online and creating some documents. It's actually, there's a process to it and it's a rite of passage. And so that would be my biggest wish, is that you take the rite of passage, you initiate yourself into adulthood with this process. And then I do also have a podcast. It's called Guided, The Courage to Listen and Act. And my big prayer here, Mindy, is that you're going to come on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yes. And we're going to talk about your story, which is
we will really, do that. Yeah. Really, so really everybody good. Listening, go find her podcast so you can hear the reverse of this whole thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Allie, well, first off, let me say this to the viewer, to the listener. I am going to link to all of those things. If you're watching us on YouTube, it's down in the comments down below. Otherwise, you can find everything in the show notes at lucra.com. And please, please, please heed her advice, because I can't tell you how grateful I am that Sean and I had done all of those things prior to his death, because you never know when and what and all of that. And thank goodness that we had taken care of those, that we had become adults before he passed. So I am so grateful for everything that you shared. You are just so, I have a lot of respect for the way that you do things so publicly, because I would probably never do them as publicly, but people like me have learned from you just by watching your experience and watching the different things you go through. So you have just tons of my gratitude, and most especially for being here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mindy. Thank you for creating Lucra and bringing this all to the world.
Thanks ever so much for listening. Whenever you're ready, here are three ways I can help you create a more lucrative life. 1, subscribe for free to my lucrative newsletter for weekly insights on business, money, and mindset. 2, join Club Lucra to connect with a like-minded community so that you don't have to go it alone. 3, work with me one-on-one to chart the course from where you are to where you want to be. Everything you need is at lucra.com. That's LUCRA.com. Lucra, where wealth equals well-being.